And hello and welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus and on the web at KUCI.org. We're on iTunes at College Radio. Today is Wednesday, November 5th, 2014. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and my guest today is literary agent Lori Fox. But before I introduce her and bring her on, I want to tell you about our fund drive that's going on. We're in the second week of it. And if you're a loyal listener of the show, which I know many of you are, you know by now that our fund drives are what really keep the station going. They raise money to pay the electric bill, to buy water. We have water back since another fund drive of another time. And they just keep us going. We're all volunteers here. I've had this show for 15 years and have pretty much been here, if not every week, every month, at least once a month, twice a month since. Nicole Nelson, Marie Stone have joined me in the last few years, and I'm grateful for them and for their help. But we're all volunteers, and your donations keep us going, no matter how small a donation. Today, well, first of all, the number is 949-824-5824. Nicole is on the phones waiting for your call. And we have premiums as well as, you can, for a $100 donation, you can come in and sit in on our show and many shows here at the station. If a smaller donation will get you a gift certificate to Laguna Beach Books in Laguna Beach, one of the best bookstores anywhere. Another donation amount, I think it's about $35, will get you a ticket to the reception for the BoucherCon conference coming up in Long Beach, the annual Mystery Writers Conference. Very special today. I have a couple of books. I have a galley of Pen on Fire that I will send to you, signed for, a $25 donation. And also a copy of Orange County Noir, which is a collection of noir fiction that I have a story in. Send it to you signed, again, for a $25 donation. Nicole has just come in to join me. What do you have to say, Nicole? Has the phone been ringing off the hook?
Hi there, Barbara. Not yet, but you mentioned our goal for the hour, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, our goal is to hear from 10 listeners this hour. And so I'm looking forward to talking to you. And I heard Barbara mentioning some of our pledge levels. And we also have a $50 KUCI supporter. And at that level, you get 2 KUCI t-shirts or 2 CDs or 2 tote bags.
Cool.
Yeah?
Yeah. I like that.
949-824-5824.
That's great. And you can also donate online at KUCI.org. You can see premiums there. You won't see the books. You won't see the Laguna Beach Books gift certificate, and you won't see the BoucherCon tickets, but you'll see other things. And if that's more comfortable, just go online and just indicate that you are donating for Writers on Writing, and that will help us keep the show here on KUCI FM. All right, I'm going to bring on Lori Fox first. She is the West Coast Associate for the Linda Chester Literary Agency based in Manhattan. As Linda Chester's partner, Lori joined the agency in 1989 and is celebrating 25 years with the agency. She's a graduate of the University of California at Santa Cruz and a published author of fiction and poetry, including The Lost Girls by Simon and Schuster. She was on the show for that book, I believe, a few years back. For the Linda Chester Literary Agency, Lori represents works of literary and quality fiction, biography and memoir, popular culture, history, and science. With Linda, Lori co-agented Wally Lamb's best-selling novels, She's Come Undone and I Know This Much Is True. Other books of Lori's include New York Times bestsellers Lolly Winston's Good Grief, Cheryl Strayed's first novel, Torch, Jonathan Kirsch, The Harlot by the Side of the Road, and David Murphy's Zombies for Zombies. And for more info, you could visit lindachester.com. Let's bring her on. Hi, Lori.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you on again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And as we do on the show, it'd be great if we'd begin by, you know, talking about the path from bookseller to agent, because you were a bookseller for quite a while and then an agent, and you're also an author. So that's an interesting combo. Talk about that.
Well, first I should confess from the get-go that my cat Gracie likes to participate in all my phone calls. So if you hear a peep, I do not have a baby. It's Gracie who's weighing in on literary matters today, and I apologize in advance for that. My path was usually linear. My path from bookseller to agent. I was a longtime bookseller in Los Angeles. I was the night manager at George Sand Books in Los Angeles. We could never answer the phone, George Sand. We had to say George Sand Books so people could understand us. And it was one of the great indie bookstores on Melrose, and a really wonderful cultural hub. We had an international magazine rack. A third of our inventory was Indian small press books. It was just a wonderful first opportunity for me, and I even loved vacuuming the store. I loved the store so much. I then graduated. I moved to San Diego, where I worked at a great independent bookstore, Warwick's Books in La Jolla, and then I also worked at an antiquarian bookstore and learned the art of antiquarian and used books as well, and had a great regard for people who spent their lives writing books on subjects for us to learn about. So I was surrounded by books from the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries written by people who were devoted to a topic and really doing a service for the culture. So it was also a magical place.
So then you became an agent.
Yes, I was working at Warwick's in La Jolla, and I met the agent, Sandra Dykstra, who's quite well known, and went to work for Sandy. And I was very privileged to have a front row seat watching from the sidelines as she developed and sold the Joy Luck Club and how she contributed to its success. So it was, I call it graduate school for agents, and it was fantastic. And I found out that an agency, a literary agency, is a very democratic place and a democratic environment. So even on the first day, I was filing and I was a receptionist, but I was also doing high-end manuscript development and consulting about auctions. And I really liked that aspect of the job. So I did leave to pursue my own writing career and then met the agent, Linda Chester, who was the first agent south of Los Angeles to open her doors. And Linda and I will be celebrating 25 years this Thanksgiving, as you noted earlier.
Yes. Yeah, and so then, but you've continued being a writer, and I'm always curious, you know, I mean, I'm always curious with anybody who's working full-time and writing and able to produce books, but, you know, being an agent and being a writer, how does that all work together?
Well, very interesting question. I know I was on your show for both of my novels and talked about how I had to become ruthless with my time. At first, I just stole away on Saturday mornings for 2 hours and worked until my laptop gave up. I worked in coffee houses in Berkeley, and I made certain that there was a separation between my own creative life and the work at the agency. And I felt very buoyed by working alongside other people who were working hard at these coffee shops in Berkeley on various subjects, learning the language, writing music, etc. And so I felt I was in a very supportive environment. And after I finished my first novel, My Sister from the Black Lagoon, I went around and proselytized, I think. I told people that I have a 70-hour work week, and if I can do it, you can do it, in so far as forging or carving out time to write. Then I found out it wasn't so easy for the second book, and that each book takes its own path, has its own process. Some books come more slowly, so I had to eat my own words after that and relearn how to carve out time.
Interesting. And so you were in Berkeley, now you're in Portland.
Yes, another literary mecca, I have to say. It's just an incredible environment. There's so much talent here and so many readings, so much devotion to books, some great independent bookstores, including Powell's, which is legendary. And two of my authors live here, which is sort of icing on the cake for me.
So, okay. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what you represent and how you know when it comes in the door that it's something you want to represent. Because, you know, from your bio, you like bio-memoir, you like popular culture, you like literary and quality fiction, history, science. So I'm thinking most of the writers who contact you, the first mode of contact really is the query letter.
That's true, and now all query letters come in via email, so it's a very efficient process, although authors should know that agents are typically overwhelmed. They say we're an overwhelmed species as a rule. But I do feel that because the queries come in via email, that the agent then regards the queries when he or she is most relaxed and has the time to dig in, rather than getting a phone call when you're extremely busy or in the middle of a negotiation. So actually, it serves the writer best to query via email, so we can look at your work when we have the time, when we're in a good mood, when we're hungry to acquire. And it's also very efficient, because then we can get back to the author as soon as possible. But we receive, on average, like most agents, about 100 cold submissions a week, in addition to the works we're already representing. So, you know, I always beg everyone for more time and to be patient. But insofar as how I know that a work is a good fit for me, it's almost instantaneous at this point. There's so much good work that we see at such a high level, but you know what's right for you. It's just the same as any reader picking up a book in a bookstore and opening, cracking it open, and falling in love with the first sentences. I think I always cleave towards the voice first, or the tone first, if it's fiction. And if I fall in love with the voice, I know that maybe it's meant to be, that it's kismet. But sometimes, you know, we're on the fence. We need to read more deeply into the manuscript. But most often we know within the first few pages, I have to say.
Interesting. You are listening to KUCI FM in Irvine. I'm with literary agent Lori Fox. So the query letter then... Does the subject line matter? Do you want to hear if somebody is referred by somebody, or if something catchy in the subject line? Does that get you reading, or does that not matter?
Oh, I think it absolutely helps me, especially when I'm combing through the email, even a week later. It's very, very helpful, and it's. Insofar as a query letter goes, I have very strong opinions. I like a very short query letter that's, I would say, punchy and frisky, if that suits the subject matter. Obviously, if the subject is quite serious, it should match the tone of the book. But I like to know the goals and ambitions of the author rather than the blow-by-blow, the synopses. To me, that's not that important up front. I really want to know what the author wishes to accomplish with the book and how the author's life informs the book, a little bit about their background. So I'm actually partial to short query letters, and I'm very eager to get on to read the work. So I always tell authors to, quote, cheat and include the first 2 to 3 actual pages of their work, because oftentimes the tone of the query letter differs from the tone of the novel. And just when we may be thinking this is not for us, we read the first few pages and eureka, we found it. We were very excited. So I don't think it hurts to add at the bottom, not as an attachment, because we won't open an attachment from someone we don't know, but just sneak in those first few pages so we can actually hear the novel for ourselves.
Hmm. And I want to tell our listeners, too, that we have a Q&A up on the ASJAMonthly.org website, a Q&A with you, and that's just gone in for the November issue. And there's a sidebar on the elements of a great query letter that you were so generous to put together. And so, you know, I thought that was a great guideline, just all the things that need to be in it. But what's interesting is all the things that need to be in it, but keeping it to a page. That,
yes,
you know, a query could be harder than the novel or the nonfiction proposal.
It can be. The craft of writing the query letter. Michael Larson, of course, has written a classic book, How to Write a Book Proposal, which also includes the query letter. I'm very taken with someone who says something that catches my attention. I always remember a fellow who said, I want unrequited love, and then just spent a paragraph on his novel, and then I started reading the work. And so I don't like too much, I don't like something to go on too long. I really am quite eager to get to the pages. So I'm actually famous in the, I won't say famous in the industry, but I used to be teased in the industry for writing long cover letters myself when I send the work off to publishers. And I've learned how to pare down my own letters now. I know there's a great need to express oneself and say everything about the novel or the nonfiction book. But I think shorter is better. I always encourage authors to think about writing their own jacket copy and sending that to agents. Pretend the book is finished. What would you like your jacket copy to say? And usually it's quite entertaining jacket copy. So I think that's a rule of thumb that I would suggest.
And of course, the jacket copy never gives away the ending.
Right.
Yeah. No, because I'm asked that, and it's like, no, don't tell everything. You know, it's like you want to tease the agent just as you would if the jacket copy were to tease the reader. You know, it's keep something back. Don't lay it all out there.
And I also most agents don't like authors who brag or distract by saying this will make a great movie. We want it to be a great book first and foremost. We do work very closely with film agents and try to option the film rights to almost all of our books. But that's secondary. You know, we're working on crafting a great book to send out. And we don't really take to people boasting or bragging. In fact, the most successful authors I've worked with are typically the most humble about their own work.
Mm. You know, speaking of film rights, is that something most agents do, or is that something that, as a writer, when you're looking for an agent, that you should find out if the agent has a sub-agent that deals with film people?
I think it's a very important question to ask the agent. The few large agencies, which are the talent agencies in Los Angeles, all have, you know, a film agent ready to roll to be there.
boutique agencies like ours work with several film agents, both the large agencies and the boutique film agencies. And we just tend to believe that we want to pair our authors with an agent, a film agent, who's as passionate as we are about the material. And these agents, these film agents, know the lay of the land in Hollywood far better than we do, and we trust them. They're our allies, and that we call them our co-agents. And we don't impose them on our clients. We make sure that our client likes their film agent and feels that they're in sync, that their sensibilities are in sync. But it is an important question, because the money from optioning a book, whether it's made into a film or not, can underwrite several novels on occasion.
Hmm. So in terms of film, what do you think is easier for a new writer, a writer who, you know, maybe has shorter works published or has published maybe books that, you know, smaller press books, but very much wants to have something made into a screenplay? Do you think it's easier to write a good book that gets that Hollywood buys or options, or do you think it's better to write the screenplay?
Well, if you're not an established screenwriter, I would say the book to film path is the easiest path or easier path.
Right.
As we all know, books that are optioned for film are rarely realized. Perhaps only 2% are, which is very daunting and sad at times. You know, there's a lot of excitement when the option is sold. And sometimes we sell the book completely, which is called a purchase, where a studio purchases a book. For instance, Rove Apocalypse by Daniel H. Wilson, my New York Times bestselling novel, was purchased outright by Steven Spielberg to direct. It's on his list to direct. My author was even seeing his own book storyboarded. We got very close to production. The actors were talking to the press about reporting to the set. And then the novel was put aside for further development. It will happen. We feel confident about that, but it's just a matter of time in terms of waiting for Mr. Spielberg to choose our book next. So even when you hit the lottery, there's still some waiting time on occasion. And then other books are made into films very quickly, especially if you go the indie route.
Yeah, so that all makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes I hear writers talking about writing screenplays and wanting to, you know, get in that way, and it does seem daunting. It seems pretty daunting without connections, without something. I mean, I don't know.
It's hard enough.
Yeah.
Period, if you're a screenwriter, to sell a screenplay. I think you have a lot more clout. If a studio knows that a major publisher believes in your book already enough to bring it out and promote it well, then they will look at it as a hotter property. That's just human nature. So, but, you know, there are cases of books that didn't necessarily break out in a big way when they were published, have become wonderful films, like The Descendants, for instance, a book I don't represent. I wish I did, but look what happened to that. Some of these stories that were not as well known as others, but were translated into film, and then it brings the audience back to the book, and that's what we like to see. We always say book first, movie second. So when we sell film rights, we're just thrilled, because we want to bring people back to the original manuscript.
Yes. You are listening to KUCI-FM in Irvine. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm here with Lori Fox, a literary agent in Portland, Oregon. And she works with the Linda Chester Agency in New York. And the website is lindachester.com, where you can find out more. And I do want to remind you, we are in the midst of a fund drive, and we need every cent we can get. So any size donation is appreciated, from $5 on up. Lots of premiums. The number's 949-824-5824. You know, I started the program 15 years ago, sort of as my own personal MFA program. And I've been told by others that it's become their own personal MFA program. One author came on and said, by listening to the show, he went from being a professional cellist to writing a book, getting an agent, major publisher. Edward Kelsey Moore, he was on some time ago. And that seems to be the case. A lot of listeners tell me they come to go to the website to listen to the agent podcasts. The podcasts are always available at penonfire.com or at writersonwriting.blogspot.com. And so there's lots of free information during the year for you with the show, what's been going on the show. So we continue the show because all three of us, Marie, Nicole, and I, feel that it benefits us and it benefits our listeners. So the number is 949-824-5824, and online is, you can just hit KUCI.org, and PayPal is there for you to use if you'd like. So anyway, let's get back to Lori Fox. I remember, I don't know if it was when we talked in the summer or for the Q&A that's on asjmonthly.org, but Lori, you said something to the effect of, you know, a comparison could be interesting. If you say, you know, my book is a cross between, I don't know, Farewell to Arms meets Twilight. And so, you know, just as an example, and at the same time, as a writer trying to interest you and not, you know, hype herself too much, you know, where is the line there in terms of comparison? I mean, if you're a mystery writer, you probably wouldn't want to say, you know, it's, you know, I would work for John Grisham fans, Stephen King fans, and all, you know, and James Patterson. That's where I am. So that would be a little too much, I think.
Well, it's a device that started with the film industry. And now the publishing industry finds it incredibly helpful, not only agents, but editors. I always use I've made up the hybrid of Fatal Attraction and Outer Space, or The Color Purple and The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you know, putting two books together, juxtaposed, that are very different, sometimes helps us immensely. Editors are always looking for what they call comps or analogs, books that were very successful that they can compare your book to. And if you have elements of a Tom Robbins book mixed with the Lori Moore book, it's very helpful for editors during their editorial meetings to say, "This has elements of these two writers," as wild as that sounds. They also like or prefer that authors choose successful models, so don't choose something that no one's ever heard of. But they find it very instructive, it's educational, because they have to go in and pitch a book that they've fallen in love with, and they need to convince their editorial board of its value. So these comparisons, although they may seem silly on face value, turn out to be extremely helpful, because then the other editors and marketing, sales, and publicity can hold in their mind, it's a little bit like this and a little bit like this. I get it. So I find it immensely helpful to try to hear these notes in in books that are pitched to me.
Hmm. Do you see, I mean, you've been an agent for more than 20 years. Do you see genres ebbing and flowing? And I guess what I'm thinking of is that a few years back, memoir just seemed to be so huge. And now it doesn't seem to be so huge. Maybe, you know, other genres are rising up on the wave and others are under. What do you think? I mean, do you just see sort of all the genres sort of, you know, the wave form where some are up and some are down, the others, you know, that are up go down, the ones that are down go up?
I do. It's heartbreaking because it's cyclical. And yes, there was a great age of the memoir. And memoirs can still be fairly hot at times, since they still use that word in New York. One thing I've noticed that's dramatic is that I've sort of lived through the great age of smart books on spirituality. They hit the heights, not just some of the New Age books, but you know, very intelligent books like Thomas More, for instance. Of course, mm-hmm. he still does quite well, but now it's very hard to find three or four editors who will cleave towards a smart book on spirituality and other genres. Memoirs have become tougher and tougher. There are more celebrity memoirs than ever, so those are shoo-ins. What I find disheartening is that the middle range seems to be shrinking. The middle range, insofar as advances go, what authors are paid for their books. So you hear in the news the buzz about the big books, the seven-figure books, and then there are the books that receive modest advances. But the middle ground, the books that were getting paid $35,000 to $50,000, are becoming more and more rare, and that's a heartache. But you know, we keep the faith about, especially in terms of genre, that something that is not so alluring or sexy anymore will rise to the top again. And that usually means that a book has done very well in that genre, and then everyone wants to have a book just like it.
Of course.
So we wait, we sit and we wait. But I still represent memoirs. I recently sold a memoir by a wonderful bookseller, Melissa Sestero, who's the events coordinator at Book Passage in Corte Madera, one of our great bookstores. And it's called Pieces of My Mother. And it's about a runaway mom, about a mother who left three little children. And it's triste and heartbreaking, but also spunky. And, you know, it was challenging. It's very lyrical. And I found someone who just fell head over heels for it. And that's what we look for, is someone else who shares our vision. So it can be a long road, though. And nobody ever knows how long the road is, because if you send out a book to an editor, it's always fresh to that particular editor. They don't really know how many turndowns you've had. They just know that they've fallen in love with the book. So that's the good news.
You also represent literary and quality fiction. Will you talk about that and how that's doing?
Well, I think the lines have blurred, and I think it's a good sign. To my mind, quality or crossover fiction, it's also called, is basically pointing to a novel that is written in a literary style but of mass interest. The subject matter is of interest to many people. An example of this would be Lolly Winston's Good Grief, mm-hmm. which is very literary in its execution, but really caught the eye of so many readers with its humor, and its heart. And I think that I mentioned earlier Robopocalypse. It's a rare book on robots by a roboticist that writes about the state-of-the-art robots in fiction with literary style. Daniel is a prose stylist, and so you get the best of both worlds. So that's what we look for, a book I represent, Cinnamon and Gunpowder, which I call a culinary-slash-pirate novel, which is out in paperback now. It's an incredible literary novel, but it's of interest to a wide readership because it has pirates in it, and it features an incredible main character, a pirate queen.
You know, I'm wondering if when you were on before, maybe when you were on with the Lost Girls, if we talked about pirates, that pirates in novels seem to be really successful. Was that us? I wonder if that was us.
I don't know. I think that we talked about Captain Hook and his descendants, and my personal interest in the Peter Pan myth, which includes one of the great villains of all time, Captain Hook. In my book, his great-grandson appears. But I think there's always been a fascination. I mean, here we have real pirates today who are quite heinous and doing some horrible things to people, but the older myths of pirates remain romantic, and swashbucklers are still, I think, of interest. In film, however, the great pirate films seem to have faded, and so we're hoping that Cinnamon and Gunpowder, I think, will translate into an amazing film. I just have to put in a good word for it because it's on my mind right now. And in one sentence, it's about a pirate queen who assassinates a lord in London and kidnaps his chef and demands that the chef cook a great meal once a week in order to stay alive. So it's a Scheherazade-like story.
That's great. Okay, what else is on your list here? Popular culture.
I'm a pop culture vulture. I like to say that my love for space and Martians, or Mars rather, and Star Trek and The X-Files, and I've done several books on zombie, but they're humor books. And they're by David P. Murphy, and they're actually inch by inch some of the funniest books I've ever read. And they're comments on consumer culture, so they're satires. It's not all about zombie lore. I've done a book called How to Defeat Your Own Clone. I'm wild about cutting edge science, and when people can take science and write about it in an entertaining fashion, I'm very smitten. I have a new book out called Physics for Rock Stars, Making the Laws of the Universe Work for You, by an engineer, a female engineer, Christine McKinley, who also is in a rock band. So it's a very funny book about physics, and that's the way in to learning about the laws of gravity, etc. And I'm just, a pushover for wonderful science. I feel that just as much creativity is being found in works of science as in fiction nowadays. And I think, I worked on the official biography of Neil Armstrong, and I'm very much interested in space travel. I see all the science fiction movies, so I do have an interest in high and low culture, I confess.
Oh, you are listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI FM in Irvine. I'm with Lori Fox, a literary agent in Portland, Oregon. And I want to remind you that the fund drive is going on, and Nicole is on the phones at 949-824-5824. So give her a call, and your donation is tax deductible. And we're getting at that point in the year where we need those tax deductions, especially if you work for yourself. You can donate online at kuci.org. Just please mention Writers on Writing so we get a little credit for your call. And lots of premiums. We have a Laguna Beach Books gift certificate that I think you get for a $50 premium. Nicole has all that info. There are CDs, there's T-shirts, there's all kinds of stuff. Your call will tell those of us who host the show that we're appreciated and that you like the show and that you like us. We want to know if you like us. So call Nicole, who's on the phone at 949-824-5824. And if you cannot call right now, you can call anytime through the end of the week. Please just say you're calling for Writers on Writing. So, Lori, what is the problem with short stories? Because it seems like there's a million publications for that take short stories, and attention spans have grown so short. It would seem to me that a story collection would work out pretty well, but they tend not to. Agents tend to not want short story collections unless maybe, you know, you say, I also have a novel. And here's my novel, and the agent likes the novel and says, okay, I'll take both.
Well, you could probably hear me sighing on the phone. I agree with you. I think in our interview I said that we are living in the golden age of short stories. They're garnering a lot of attention from the press, from readers, collections of stories and anthologies are doing well. If they're on a specific theme, especially. And there's so many gifted short story writers now. I represent a few that also do novels on the side. But their true gift is in writing short stories. Their passion is for the short story. But when it comes to selling short stories to New York, and I'm just talking about New York right now because I don't deal with the great mass of very impressive indie houses throughout the country. So I primarily, all my comments are really focused on the major New York publishing houses. Short stories are perceived as difficult to sell. The sales figures bear this out. The books simply don't, quote, perform as well as novels do. So you're right. Editors are looking for writers who have a short story collection to kick off their careers, but they want to make sure that the author has a novel as well. And this is unfair because there are, as I said, writers who have perfected the form of short story writing. I represent one, Carolyn Cook, whose collection just out from Knopf, Amor and Psycho, is out to great reviews. And I love a great short story, but we're up against the sales figures. And so going in, we know it's a challenge. And yet, you know, we honor so many great short story writers in our culture, like Alice Munro. So it's a dilemma. And you're right about attention spans. People like to sit down with a short story. They feel successful that they can at least get through the story before they have to get on to their work. But, the number of readers in our culture is shrinking, and They are not buying short story collections as much as we would hope. So it is a difficult road, but, you know, I still encourage people to go on that road. And the independent presses don't have any problems with short story collections, so I would encourage people to go that route.
When you're checking out agents, I mean, we have an incredible information load going on just in general, but, you know, there's so much info on agents that can be found online, but there's the information overload again in terms of there's so much. What should you really pay attention to if you're looking for an agent?
These are the two things I would do as a writer. There's the Bible in our industry, which is called Literary Marketplace, or the LMP. I suggest that writers do not buy it. It's way too expensive. There's only about 40 pages devoted to agents in this book. But the book is at every library and in their reference section. And you just need to sit down with it. This is the most complete listing of agents that exists. And what's great about Literary Marketplace, three words, is that you get the most current contact information, the email, the phone number, the address, but you also get a list of what these agents are seeking so you don't make a mistake in terms of genre. So they boldly announce what they're looking for. So again, just 40 pages to go through to find an agent that's a good match. The other best way is to look at the books that you personally love and go to the acknowledgement section of the book. And most writers do thank their agent. And so you can get the name of their agent and then just Google that agency. Look at their list online. Most agents have a list of their select titles. And see if you're a good fit with that agency.
I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you again. Talk about your dream client.
I know you asked me about the client from hell.
You could talk about that one if you want.
Well, that one was easy because it's only happened a few times in 28 years, but the author who tries to micromanage the agent and control every aspect of the process, from the cover letter to the negotiation. Mostly we're looking for authors who trust the agent to do his or her job, but not to take over our job. Because if you really want to do all of that, you don't need an agent. You should submit your book yourself, but that works best with independent presses. A dream client for me is a prose stylist with ideas that send me to the moon. I want to be inspired, to be smitten. The author, Joy Williams, said, this was loose about short stories, but I believe this about all work. She said, a short story should break your heart and make you feel ill at ease. It should be swift and damaging. Well, I don't believe that all books should make you feel ill at ease, but I actually cleave towards books that are swift and damaging. I like dark material, but I also like material with heart and that makes you laugh. I like books that are equally balanced between the dark and the light, but I want to be taken by the collar, woken up, shaken up by the work I see. And not all books can do that from the get-go. Sometimes it's a process of wading in to the pool and, you know, especially, let's say, a historical novel, which builds over time. But going back to what the question is, my dream client is someone who will not be defensive, who will listen to me and take about 80% of my advice but screen out all the stuff that doesn't make sense to them at all. and to do the same with their in-house editor at a publishing house, to adopt about 80% of the advice. That's usually a good rule of thumb. After all these years in the industry, I have to say I no longer have the patience I once had for the charming egomaniacs. So I'm looking for people who are open and hungry for new ideas and not closed off to suggestion. And I think I mentioned this too, that I have a special place in my heart for eccentrics and mavericks, but also for writers who really are interested in language, who love using words, line by line, so I can swoon over the sentences as well. I do understand there are writers who dazzle you sentence by sentence, and then there's other writers who are just very solid storytellers, and you're not as conscious of the language. You're more invested in the emotional impact of the story, and that's very important too.
Mm.
But personally, I think most agents are looking to be woken up by something new and something they haven't heard before, and that's not easy to find, and that's not easy to do as a writer either, is to find a voice that's original. It's just something that we hunger for as agents. I will say this and then I'll shut up, but I love a good prologue. I often say I'm a prologue whore. I love when novels start off with a prologue that addresses me as a reader and sort of gives me a sense of if it's in first person, who the narrator is. I love to be addressed directly.
Hmm.
It's one of my favorite things.
Well, thank you so very much, Lori, for taking the time and being here during my fun drive shout outs.
And you performed such a service. I just wanted to thank you through the years. You've done a remarkable job for all of us, for the industry, for authors. I hope the pledge drive goes remarkably well.
Thank you. Thank you. That was Lori Fox with the Linda Chester Agency in New York. She's stationed in Portland, and that's all the time we have. Stay tuned for music, for reggae, and you've been listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI FM in Irvine.